Thank you. Yeah, thank you for inviting me. I'm quite excited to be part of this great panel and tell you more about our work as Big Sydney Collective. So, the collective was founded in 2018 as a response to our frustration with the normalization of racist police violence in Austria, but also everywhere else. And our collective, like, we are people with different political backgrounds and experience and perspectives. A few of us experience racist police violence and others not. But I will tell you a bit more later about the collective. Today, I will talk a bit about safety, or better say, not safety in terms of police and racist police violence. And I would like to start with a conversation I had during the weekend as a friend of mine. We were sitting together and we talked about a person who got attacked by a stranger on a bus stop during the weekend. And like, it was a racist attack. And the friend and I, we were talking about how to support that person. And in the middle of the conversation, my friend said something like, I mean, what are they supposed to do? Call the police? And was laughing sarcastically. And we were both laughing, even though it was not funny at all. But we both knew that calling the police wouldn't be an option. And maybe it's important to mention that we are all brown. And in this context, I'm somehow the privileged one when it comes to me speaking German and having a German citizenship. Which is not the case for the person who got attacked. So I will come back to this experience later. I just wanted to share it as, like, this story, there's so many aspects of not being safe in it. When I did some research about police in general in Austria, I came across a website in German. It's called polizeikarriere.at. It's something like police career. Where the Austrian police advertise themselves and, wants people to join them, to work for them. So next to a lot of other weird stuff, they are saying something like, the police in Austria ensures nationwide police presence and maintains public peace, order and security. And so I have my own experience with police, and also I'm writing my master thesis about this topic, and I did a lot of interviews. And reading that, it came to my mind that all of us, we're not really feeling safe when police is around. So I was wondering whose security or safety are they talking about, and what do they mean with public order or peace? So, there are already a lot of Black and Indigenous writers and activists who show how the concept of safety and the origins of the police, as we know them today, are intertwined with colonialism. And I think also you, Daniela, will talk about, like, in your text at least, a lot about structural racism and all these aspects. So I will just, like, shortly say something to that. For example, in the south of the US, first versions of the police were slave patrols that caught enslaved people who tried to escape. And Maria McHaber summarized it as follows. There's not a single era in United States history in which the police were not a force of violence against Black people. And I mean, obviously, it's important to mention that there's, of course, a difference between the US and the European context, but also in the European one, police was and still is aiming to protect the status quo, a system that's in favor of rich people, of white people. And at this point, people always like trying to tell me, yeah, but it's not the same. But I always keep telling, like, yes, there is police violence in Austria, even if the media and politicians and a lot of civil society don't get try to outsource the problem to the US or everywhere else than Austria. But I mean, policing in 2021 is still about controlling racialized bodies, securing a patriarchal order, and protecting property. And like, protecting everything that keeps a capitalistic, racist, patriarchal system alive. In other words, I think we can call it the social and public order in Austria. And yeah, so I would to just drop a few names of activists, writers and scholars who talk about a lot about abolition, police violence and everything around it, like Angela Davis, Maria Makaba, Andrea Ricci and Fatima El Tayeb, but also in the German-speaking context, for example, Vanessa Thompson, who also, I think, did an article for Migrascene once. So yeah, coming back to the police, I mean, I'm not a historian and not a political scientist, so I can't really explain political systems in details. But what I know is that we have a state and the police is part of the executive branch and has the sole authority to use force and violence to protect the state and its citizens. And of course, we are talking nation states here, so people with Austrian citizenships, and also there are different levels of privileged people have. So to summarize this, I think the system we live in needs the police to protect and maintain us. Therefore, it is hardly surprising who is seen as worthy of protection by the police. If you're white, Christian, cisgender, heterosexual, able-bodied, and you have money, you are definitely considered as worthy of protection. You have rights, and the police make sure to protect these. And then, of course, the question comes to our mind, like, who are they protecting against? And it's basically everyone who is not what I have just listed. Of course, and again, in various extents. But it all comes down to the others, the strangers, the ones that are constructed as dangerous, with the consequence of not being worthy of protection. And I think racial profiling as a form of racist police violence makes it pretty clear who is considered as dangerous and whose safety we are talking about. Racial profiling mostly justified through the promise of keeping Austria safe. And it's a form of policing that's based on like racist attributions. People are controlled on the basis of supposed origin, language, skin color, and appearance in general. Fatima El Tayeb describes racial profiling as follows. Certain groups of people are categorized on the basis of appearance and assigned negatively connoted group characteristics. These justify then disciplinary measures without being understood as a restriction of individual rights. And even though racial profiling often takes place in public spaces, quite visible, there are just a few people who intervene. This has many reasons, but one of them is because people who walk by such a control automatically assume that the control is somehow justified and there to protect them. So I think the trust in the police is deeply rooted in the thinking of people who never have experienced any bad things with the police. And as, yeah, I think, I mean, I grew up in Germany, but also in Austria, I think maybe it's the same, but when you're in school and sometimes the police comes there and talks to you and it's always a nice police person and it's there telling you I'm there to protect you and everything. So it's like it's taught you from a very young age that police is there to trust. But I think already in kindergarten and already in school, some kids already know that it's not the case. And the reality is that many people experience racist police violence on a daily basis. And these are not by no means isolated cases, but institutionalized and structural police violence. Worst case, it ends with the death of black and brown people. And here in Vienna, especially at places like Praterstern, Kanal, Gumpendorfer Straße, and also the First District, like racial profiling is also a way of keeping certain people out of areas, like for example during lockdowns, the police controls increased a lot and people got extremely high fines, and especially a lot of young people while walking through the First District, for example, while white, I don't know, for everyone who doesn't know Vienna, the First District is like the expensive district where all the like expensive shops and I don't know how else to describe the First District, but it's in the middle of Vienna. And yeah, you just, mostly there are a lot of rich white people, maybe to summarize it. So during lockdowns and after the lockdowns, where it was still mandatory to wear a mask, there were a lot of white people walking around without masks, really close to each other, and they were completely unbothered by the police. But young people of color got stopped and fined for not wearing masks. I think that also shows who is wanted there and who is not wanted there. So I think it's important to say that we also need to talk about consequences of the police being a threat. Experienced police violence can cause both physically and psychological harm that can last for a long time. It can affect every aspect of your life. People suffer from anxiety, trauma, and other kinds of consequences. But it's not only terrible for the person who experienced it, but also for their partners, friends, and other people who are supporting. So also it's just the fear of being controlled or being harassed can be devastating. Also for parents, for example, who know that their children are at risk of being abused by the police. So when we come back to the story I told at the beginning, there's a question of who do we call when we need protection in cases of domestic violence, abuse, sexual violence, to just name a few. And for many people, there's a case that you can't call the police because your resident status is uncertain. You need to fear repression, or it's likely that everyone will believe the person who attacked you simply because they are white. And I already mentioned that I did some interviews for my master thesis on, like, the working title at the moment is Experiences and Perspectives of Women and Non-Binary People Who Experienced the Racial Profiling in Vienna. And I did some interviews for that. And what each and every of them had in common was that there's a lack of safety, which affects their lives in many ways. I mean, they all experience this in different ways, as they have different experiences. More like it depends on citizenship, color of your skin, like the darker you are, mostly the more you get harassed. Like in terms of colorism, for example, they assume gender identity, then something one of my interview partners called pretty privilege, and like a lot of other things. But what they all had in common was that they would never rely on the police, but also that they all have strategies to survive, and they all, as they can't rely on the state, they rely more and more on friends and families and sometimes allies. So when we come back to the question, who enjoy the state of being safe, I would say people who are privileged enough to fit somehow into the state or be wanted by the state. And if you're not what the state wants, then safety is definitely not the state's priority for you. So if we can't call the cops, what gives us safety if state security does not apply to us? When we are even constructed as a threat, and when the institution that is supposed to protect is a threat for us, a danger that can end like with death, whether through failure of help or active use of force. And I would say, and also like a lot of other people, and of course, all what I say is like coming out of discussions with in the collective we have and with the workshops we do. So I think we must create a security for ourselves because we cannot rely on police or the state. And even sometimes they give us something, but always I think we need to keep in mind that these institutions are not built to protect us. Sometimes they need us simply to show that they are better, but let's not put work or effort in something that is not supposed to keep us safe. And I bet a lot of people have already developed strategies to keep themselves safe, consciously or unconsciously. And I mean, there are a lot of concepts and strategies of alternative ways of safety, mostly coming from a Black, female, queer and trans perspective, as these are people who could never rely on anyone else than themselves. For example, concept of transformative justice and community accountability. I think there's also a text in the last edition of the Mikazin, I think, about transformative justice or something. And this is about taking responsibility for each other, for our own actions, for the community, to focus on the person who experienced violence, but also supporting and healing them. But on the other hand, also to work with abusers, to transform and be accountable. And all that as a, like a community action, and to never forget to also transform social conditions that perpetuate violence. And I think it's also important to talk about policing and how we internalized it. So policing is not only something that only the police does, also private securities, schools, etc. And I think also ourselves. Ayesha Khan, she's known on Instagram as Vogue Scientist, made a post on to abolish police and prisons, we must first abolish the culture of punishment in our daily life and relationships. And I think you should definitely follow Ayesha Khan if you have Instagram. What's in this post is like it's so important to reflect on how we act with each other in our communities, how we solve conflicts, how we tend to individualize structure violence, how we don't give time for growth, learning, and easily divide between good and bad, and seeing ourselves always as the better one, even though we all have harmed people in our lives, realizing that we also have to work on keeping others safe from us. I think that's like a really important part in that. And coming to an end, I would like to say something about our collective, like Big Sibling, and the work we are doing. So we want to bring people together and build spaces to exchange, heal, and learn. Because we think that even if it's just like meet other people who experience racial profiling versus police violence, the feeling of not being alone can mean safety. And to finally have a language for what is happening can make me feel safer. I meet like a lot of young people who don't really, they know what's happening to them, but they don't have a language. And if you don't have a language for us, it's really hard to like do something against it. So I think that's one way. And to realize that it's a structural problem. And also to acknowledge that there are already a lot of strategies and knowledge in the womb. I think that's also a thing that can create safety. And to listen and learn from each other, to have legal information, and also to accept that a we or a community does not always equal safety, so that everyone needs to take responsibility for own actions, words, to create safer spaces, and also to organize and create space for resistance and be in solidarity with each other can bring safety. So this is what we try to do with Big Sibling in workshops and discussions, public outreach. We, for example, have a workshop, it's called like Imagining a World Without Police. So there we have like time to just create images and utopias about like how could like a world like this look like. Because I think when we always say like, it's like, it's not possible, then we need to start talking about it. And I think what all these discussions also have in common, and like what we also need to keep learning and reminding each other, is that a safer world means a world without police, means like long-term developing and working towards and building utopias and making small and bigger steps towards an alternative system that is not built on capitalism, patriarchy, and racism.